Welcome to Your Future in Sales and Marketing, a podcast that helps you make great decisions to get the most out of your career. My name is Mike Dixon, and I'm a professional sales and marketing recruiter. I love what I do, but my biggest frustration is seeing the careers of too many people slow down before they should. In this podcast series, I'll introduce you to an incredible group of leaders who will tell their story. We'll discuss how they've made it to the top, how they created and reacted to opportunity. Together, we'll help you to be ready for a career conversation, to make great career decisions, and realize your potential. In this episode, I chat with Michael Rowe, Sales Director of Selly's, part of the Dulux Group. Michael is a career marketer who made the move from marketing director to sales director when working with Johnson & Johnson. He talks candidly about the unique perspective that gives him, both in customer top-to-tops and around the board table. Enjoy. Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the XR Sales and Marketing Director Incubator, our first crossover session. My name is Mike Dixon. I lead the Sales and Marketing Practice for AXR Recruitment and Search. And today's guest is Michael Rowe, Sales Director for Selly's. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Mike, and good morning to your listeners. It's great to be with you all today.
Thanks. So some of you are wondering, what do you mean by crossover session? Well, we'll bring that to life through the conversation, but just to give it some context, Michael's led some sizable sales and marketing functions in his career. After a successful, mostly marketing career in companies such as Lion, Diageo, GSK, in Australia, the UK, and the US, he returned to Australia to lead J&J's marketing function before then swapping and leading the sales function in J&J, and then transitioning categories completely into Selly's, part of the Dulux Group. So as you can see, he is a unique individual, both a marketing director and a sales director. Let's get into it. Offline, Michael, we're just talking about the vagaries of COVID and how different countries were coping. Now, obviously in Sydney, as in some other parts of Australia, we're in lockdown just now. But, you know, when we're not, and over the last year and a half, have you managed to get anywhere else? Did you get to places in Australia you might not have been before?
I love exploring Australia. Those that know me well, I've got a four-wheel drive and the family and I have bounced around the Kimberleys for 3 weeks and other places. Interestingly, my son and I had planned to hit the Northern Territory last year for 3 weeks and the borders closed. So sadly, we didn't do that. But yeah, in and around that, got up to far north Queensland, got my daughter settled into a new university at the start of the year. We love getting out in and around New South Wales. Jindabyne's a favourite, both summer and the winter skiing. So yeah. Not to plan, but not totally in isolation.
Yeah, I wonder when we get through this next period of lockdown, whether people just kind of go crazy and start traveling again. Certainly, I've done a few, long weekends away and all this kind of stuff. And actually, getting accommodation is really tough, you know, because everyone's trying to go somewhere all the time. So I think domestically, hopefully, the travel industry is getting some good boosts of activity when we can travel. But talking of which, you know, you've lived in different parts of the world, and Sydney clearly is, we probably agree, is probably one of the best places in the world to live. But if you had to live somewhere else permanently, where would it be?
Yeah, and having lived in the UK a couple of times and a couple of cities in the US, I agree Sydney is a wonderful city, and it's hard to go past Australia. But I really enjoyed my time on the east coast of America. I ended up in a place called Mendham, New Jersey. We're about 40 miles out of New York City, so sort of half an hour, 40 minutes on a train, and you could be right in the middle of it. But where I was living, it was like a semi-rural environment, a village pub, plenty of trees. I literally would have deer on my front lawn, and in the winter you'd see the bear tracks between the houses. So best of both worlds, and it was great living. The people there are used to international folk coming in and out. We really enjoyed our time in the States, and that was a great place to be.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic. Well, let's get into your career journey. Lots to talk about. We'll come back to some of the things you've done, but I want to really start actually with this transition period of yours. So you were, as I mentioned before, running the marketing function for J&J Consumer Healthcare Business and transitioned to sales. And that's a really unusual move. Firstly, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I had come back from the UK and done about 4.25 years leading the marketing team. So big categories, whether it be oral care, femme hygiene, OTC, et cetera. But around 3 years in, I just felt myself, I was really loving the company, liking the opportunities. They were talking to me about moves outside of Australia. But I had two children in high school, wanted to have some stability through that period. And I reached out to them when actually a head of pharmacy role came up and said, hey, can I make the switch? I think they were very surprised. One, because it involved me going back at a level. But two, the fact of the marketing guy wanting to dive into sales. At the time, there'd just been significant marketing restructures and stuff. And they said, no, we need you there. There's too much changing in marketing. It's too risky. Sit tight. And then they came to me, maybe it was 9-12 months later, and said, yeah, you ask about sales, what do you think about the sales director role? And it really took off from there. So perhaps the first lesson is, you know, be brave with your own career, guys, and at points in it, it may make sense to step sideways or even potentially be prepared to go backwards. For me, I didn't have to do that in the end, but that's really where it started. Right?
That's fantastic. And do you think... We were saying again before that we started this conversation, Michael, I wish more people would move from sales to marketing. Now, on this program and on the podcast, we've talked a lot about moves that you know, people moving from say a sales to a shopper marketing role, or from brand into category possibly, but from sales to marketing almost for many seems a bridge too far. Why do you think not more people do it?
Yes, it's a really interesting thought. So I think when I was younger, I started in marketing. I started in a graduate recruitment program with Lion Nathan, working at the Swan Brewery in Perth, Western Australia. I started in marketing and it sort of was lucky. It chanced into it and I loved it. And I pretty quickly put my hand up for a role in sales when one did come about. But I think what happens, you get into a career, whether it be sales or marketing, the logical next step is often the job above you. It's comfortable for you because you know what it involves. It's comfortable for the manager because they know you. And you start chasing those promotions, those pay rises. And early in your career, they are very meaningful, right? You don't have the dollars you do later on as the sales or marketing director. But I do think that then... channels you into a function and it reduces your breadth. And then at that point, later on, when you've got the wisdom to appreciate some of these other elements, you mightn't have the experience. And so I think it is through your own decisions, you can limit your future career growth if you don't work to build that breadth earlier in your career.
Yeah. And as a leader of a sales function now, but you've obviously led several marketing functions. Have you had people come to you to say, from the opposite side, if you like, and say, when you're leading marketing, if, as a sales guy, ever come to you, a girl so come to you and said, I'd love to make the move. How do I do it? Or similarly, a marketer come to you leading a sales function and say, I'm a brand manager, but do you think I could be a national account manager? Does that conversation ever happen?
It has happened, but it happens way too frequently. And I think for every one of those, I've probably had two where I've encouraged someone to think about moving from marketing to sales or sales to marketing. And I think the move I had at J&J really opened a number of people's eyes, and that triggered a whole lot more cross-functional moves through the business. And it was a very interesting and I think a really productive time for career growth within the business. We had guys stepping from brand management into account management. It was very different. They were scratching their head. We had people moving more typically from our category team into the brand teams as well. But they talk about it within the team. And I think it was all different to what they had thought, but it was all a great learning experience. And that was discussed and shared across the business and it facilitated more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope more people going forward do that. I think what we're trying to do in this program is encourage people to have the conversation. I think what you're saying as a leader, a senior leader, if someone left field in another function comes to you to say, hey, what do you think? Is this possible? Then you're saying absolutely have the conversation. It is possible.
I would really encourage people to have the conversation. And as I think back through my career, I got some sales experience very early on. And then to be honest, I was chasing the promotions like most other marketeers, and really keen to get to senior brand manager, marketing manager, and up the tree. And if I did one thing different, and I loved all my moves and all of that sort of stuff, but I wished I'd paused and gone into national account management. Maybe been a account director in the US, while I was over there being a marketing director, and done a little bit more zigzagging through my career. Might have taken me a few more years to get to a marketing or sales director position, but I would have had a lot more breadth to bring to that, and would have had a lot more, or could have had more runway. I've been very fortunate with J&J to be able to make that move later on. Some companies do it, but it is a bit higher risk and a bit more unusual. So I haven't lost anything for not doing it, but my advice to others would be embrace those cross-functional career moves through your career. Look at one of the best finance directors I've worked with. He went out and sold Fem Hygiene for a couple of years with J&J earlier on, and it made him totally different around the boardroom table. A really unique input as a finance director, and one I've never seen from anyone else.
Fantastic. Love that, those kind of examples. Looking back at your career, then, Michael, and reflecting on all the kind of moves that you've made, and we talked a bit about the transition from marketing to sales there, but what was your, if you could kind of contrast your toughest and easier career decisions, where would you go to? What was a kind of real tough one? What was a real kind of obvious easy one?
Well, this is a strange answer, but it was actually the same decision I had to make. Was probably the toughest and the easiest, but for different reasons. So I've moved 7 times with Corporatio, from Lyme, Perth to Sydney, then moved to London and back with Diageo to Pittsburgh to New Jersey to London with GSK. And each time those great moves have come about, from a professional point of view, it's just been very exciting. You can see the growth, you can see the opportunity, you can feel the stretch, and not just perhaps a change in role or change in culture. You've got a whole different markets, different customers. And so they've been really easy to take. But as I've grown through my career, I've also grown as an individual. I've become married, I've had children, and some of those moves and others which I weren't able to take has equally made those decisions very tough, Mike, and I've had to think about the impact on my wife, my children. At times I've been offered really exciting roles and would love to have done them, but at the same point in time I'm thinking, gosh, my kids have already been at 5 schools. At some point I need to settle down so they can get through high school and get some good grades. And so at times I've compromised some of my personal career decisions for what I thought was the better family decision. And very proud. My oldest daughter completed high school last year. She's off studying the degree that she wanted, medicine up at James Cook Uni. So I think some of these decisions have paid out. They've paid out in different ways.
Some of those moves that you've spent different phases of your career overseas, you talked about, obviously that has an impact on your family life. Now, a lot of people will be sitting here thinking, I'm ready for an overseas move. This is the time for me to do that. But I can't do it because of obviously the times we're living in. And when we get through COVID and there's more international movement in 2-3 years' time, whatever that could be, that individual might not be ready. Life might have moved on to a different phase. Will that negatively impact their career?
Well, I'm not 100% on the current COVID situation, but I am aware people are still moving in and out of Australia. And I've seen some of my own network take roles in London over the last year, and aware of other people in my extended network who've moved out, companies like Reckitt, Aldi, et cetera. And so I think when people are faced with these international opportunities, there's a degree of nervousness and there's a degree of personal sacrifice. You will get tremendous learning, great opportunity. You've got to say goodbye put your local relationships on pause. Could be with a sporting club, family, et cetera. And you do miss out a bit locally. And I think I would just encourage people to go for it. There's never a perfect time. There's always something that could hold you here or wherever you're based, Melbourne, Brisbane, et cetera. If you get the opportunity, chase it. And even with COVID, you can still move around. We were just talking about life in London where we both got family and they're working, they're living, having a great time. So I really encourage people to do it. Every time I made one of those moves, I grew incredibly, both professionally and personally. At a professional level, particularly if you're going to one of these big, developed Western markets, you get into some very big teams with deep specialties. You learn a lot from those digital experts, those media experts, those senior category people. You learn so much personally as well. You put yourself in different cultures, different environments. One of the roles I had was in London leading a global team on Lucozade, flying in and out of markets like Nigeria, China, et cetera, and just seeing how these different cultures work and facing tremendously different business challenges. In Nigeria, it was all around electricity. The power would go off for a few hours a day. We had to buy bottles through some local legislation from a local bottle manufacturer, and they just couldn't keep up. And what we ended up doing was building them a plant inside our own plant, plugging them into the GSK generators, and we just cut a hole in the wall where their bottles would come into our Lucozade factory. It was fixed.
I was going to ask about the differences sometimes of working in global roles like that compared to local roles. That's a pretty good example. You're faced with a whole different set of challenges. The sounds of it, that's an incredible example.
Really different. I'm not sure what it's like today, but when we were flying, when I go to Nigeria, there would be armed guards pick you up from the airport, guys with machine guns in front of you and a separate car behind you. You literally were locked in at night. You couldn't go anywhere. And that was the sort of personal security stuff. Then you go to other countries and you're out and you're seeing things, but they're all great learnings and really good experiences.
How do you go about assessing an opportunity in your career? You've made some really interesting moves and some of those have gone from one company to another company, some of which you had great moves within businesses. How do you go about assessing an option? And does that differ if it's an internal move or an external move?
Yeah, I think there's all the expected stuff about looking at the role and what you can do and what you're going to learn and bring to it. But the bigger piece of advice that I would offer, and a guy called Phil Krenigan gave this to me when I was working at Guinness Australasia, and Phil would say something along the lines of, getting a job is a bit like catching a bus. You don't catch a bus for the bus. You catch a bus for the place it takes you to. And what he was really trying to say is, don't think about the job. Think about the second and the third job behind it. And is this job taking you where you want to go? And so what I would suggest to the audience is, understand your strengths, your developments, have a clear idea of where you want to go in your career. And so when a job comes up, think about that. Is it going to be a constructive building block in that career? Or is it going to be a side shoot that perhaps is a dead end? So in amongst all the obvious stuff, I'm really thinking about, is this leading me to the job that I ultimately want, and is it helping me grow and build on that? So we spoke about the move from marketing director to sales director. In my career, I want to lead companies, become a managing director, general manager, that type of thing. And that's why I was very keen to join sales. That's why I was prepared even to go backwards to do it. So I could see great learning and enormous professional growth. And it wasn't for that particular job. It was for ultimately where I wanted to end up.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's really good advice. I often talk to candidates who are discussing, they're in a juxtaposition in their career. They talk to me about what they do next. And too often that conversation is narrow. It's on the job. I don't use that bus analogy, but I might just steal that. I do like it because it's the same thing or advice I gave in a different way, which is, the job is just the window into the next business that you're within, and you're joining an organization. So think of the organization first and what you could do, not just in that role, but what's the next role and the next role after that, and what pathways, plural, might be opening up by doing that role. Now, if it's just a job in itself, then actually it's probably a narrow way to look at it, and you're not necessarily going to make a great decision there because you're not sure of what's next. But if that role is going to open up more pathways to you, then it's potentially worth looking at. So, definitely. Similar advice that I give. Question in from the chat from Ben. Often cross-functional is talked about but easily dismissed. You mentioned cross-functional changes and people scratching their head. What would your key challenges piece of advice be that you think a traditional sales background associate might not consider or be aware of when transitioning to marketing?
Thank you, Ben, for the question. It's really interesting when you think about sales, you're definitely selling something. And when I think about marketing, you're really the customer. You're buying things. You have the cash and people will come to you. You're like at the center of a wheel managing many different projects and many different functions to deliver those projects. So it is a big change, but one I think people can make. Ben, as I would think about it, the bigger difference for me is sales is very much in the here and now. And yes, we are thinking strategically and planning ahead for reviews that might be 6 or 12 months away, but there's a lot of day-to-day activity. And for me, great marketing teams and great marketeers, apart from evaluating programs and looking at what's going on, are often working on something that will hit the market in 9 months' time. When you think about it, you've got to develop it, get it ready, get it through all your different agencies, media plans, and then build great partnerships with customers to execute it. And you can't do that stuff 3 or 4 weeks out. So I think it's a different working style. There's a lot more planning, organisation, and I think a lot more strategic thought and enrolling stakeholders because you are at the centre of this hub. You are calling the shots, and brands bring so much value to companies. It's a really interesting move and one I would encourage you to make. Just be prepared for some of those big differences.
Yeah. Building on that, Michael, you know, as a trained marketer, do you think you operate differently as a sales director compared to a traditional sales director?
It's an interesting thought. What is a traditional sales director? And I was listening to one of the podcasts recently, and they were talking about the traditional sales director is changing. And I think that's very true. When I started my career, they were probably a bit more loud, gregarious, you know, the sort of people person would fill a room. And nowadays, I think customers are far more analytical, far more strategic, and they expect their senior salespeople that are calling on them to help them really deliver business growth. And so I think sales directors are changing. They are becoming more strategic. They are becoming much more longer term. And when I say becoming, sorry, I'm talking on average, many of them today are massively strategic thinkers. And so I think the differences 20 or 30 years ago were probably more marked. And if you were looking at great marketing directors, great sales directors today, I think they would be much closer in many areas.
Which brings us back to the point before that more people should make the move between the two because there's more alignment of some of the core capabilities, taking aside the technical skills, than ever before.
I think that, so some of the differences is in marketing, you're working on these projects that are further away. In sales, you're really part of that day-to-day running of the business. And so you do get much more, you move from in marketing, I'd say, an awareness or an exposure. In sales, you're partnering with the supply chain. You're very aware of any challenges they might be having. You're working with customers. These retailers are looking at the weekly sales. You know, they're in there 6 o'clock on a Monday morning. They're taking apart what's just happened over the weekend. Everything is at a much faster cadence, and that is really important, particularly if you want to go on and not just become a chief marketing officer, but if you want to become a managing director, a CEO, those type of things. The sorts of skills, exposure, and the way you work in sales is very different, and it brings so much more to your own skill set as you look at those senior roles.
Yeah, great. I'd love to get your take, Michael, on the working relationship between a sales director and a marketing director. Again, having this unique perspective, having been both, you know how each thinks, even though there's, as we're saying, more of an alignment there. But describe when it's working well, what does that relationship look like?
Yeah, and I'm currently partnering with a guy called Paddy Bryans, who doesn't, even though I'm doing the podcast, I don't think this morning, but I'd say that is a really great relationship between a sales and marketing director as a pairing. We both understand what our role is in that our business. We both respect our roles with that business. We do talk differently. We do raise different points. But we always come together because we appreciate to win as a commercial team, we have to show up as a sales and marketing team. There's none of that cheap point scoring or looking over the fence and trying to sort of judge what the other team is doing. It's just positive, constructive conversation. Yeah, at times there's a different perspective, and a psychologist would talk about the performance arousal curve and how you do need a degree of tension to maximise performance, but it's about managing that and making sure it's not too much tension where it becomes destructive. So I think a great relationship would be all around the mutual understanding of the different roles and a respect of those different roles, but with the intent to come together to deliver a total commercial result.
Yeah. And as somebody who's, you know, been in his role, do you find yourself sometimes standing in his shoes thinking, I wouldn't do it that way?
Yeah, that's a great. And I do feel for, I've had a few marketing directors since I made the change to sales, and I have been very conscious because, you know, I had a very deep 20 plus years in marketing. And so I have looked, and occasionally I think, oh, I probably could do this, or we could add a bit here. At times you may make the suggestion, but equally, you know, I've been around long enough to respect there's not often one path from A to B. There's many different ways of achieving that same result. And I think, you know, in an organisation you want diversity and diverse thought and diverse ways of approaching things. So, yeah, you watch, you coach where it's needed, but also let them get on with it. And that's part of respecting it. They're skilled professionals. They might do it differently to I, but it doesn't mean it's better or worse. As long as we get to the end result, it's a win.
Yeah, and knowing what you know now, in as a now a fairly established sales director as well, when you look back at your career as a marketer, or you're looking at marketers now, what advice would you give in terms of whether it's a brand manager or a marketing manager or a marketing director about working with the sales function? Would you do it differently? Knowing what you know now, and if so, what advice would you give marketers today in terms of saying, "Hey, what advice I'd give you in terms of working with your sales counterparts?"
Yeah, there'd be many things that I would do the same, but definitely there'd be some differences. And I think as I reflect on my time running brands and marketing teams, you look at your brands like they're your baby, right? You're very passionate and protective of them. You see the world from that view out. And it's easy to forget what the sales team are doing. And I think a great sales team internally will champion the needs of the customer. But when they're in front of the customer, they're going to champion the needs of the business. So they're trying to bring those two different groups together. And one of the biggest things that I would advise marketeers to do is retailers have got so much going on. They're not really interested in trading brand A to brand B. They want to just sell more. So think about your total category strategy and think about how your marketing activities will help drive total category growth. They want to sell more and they need to bank more margin as they do it. And as a brand guy, at times you think about the competition and how can I win share from brand A or how can I take share from brand B? When you're really trying to win with the sales team, what you need to say to the retailer is, we're going to help you sell more of A and B. And under that category position, once you've got the trust, you should be able to get your brand in an advantageous spot and win more of that category growth than the other guy can.
Yeah, yeah. And in order to understand the category from the customer perspective, what sort of relationship should a marketeer have with a customer?
Yeah, and I think that the more a company can call on a customer, the better that would be. But the first and most important thing to think about in making any sort of sales call is it should be purposeful. Diving back a little bit, when you think about a buyer or you think about a senior retailer, average buyer at, say, Coles or Woolies is probably dealing with 100, 150 suppliers. Okay, if you're in one of those big dominant categories like bread or drinks, you wouldn't. But if you're in general merch, health and beauty, you would literally have supplier after supplier, and they've only got the time to build a productive relationship with perhaps 2 to 4 suppliers. They're going to pick the guy, he or she, with the biggest wallet, and then the other 2 or 3 relationships are going to be those that really help them deliver their KPIs, which is category growth, profitable margin growth. So As you build these relationships and work towards sales calls, think about their time. They don't have a lot of it. And think about how you can be very purposeful in how you show up. So as a marketeer out on a sales call, you want to be able to briefly talk about the KPIs and what's working in that retailer as well as across the market. And then think, what can you bring to that sales call to help that customer relationship? So real understanding around the consumer, the insight, and how that relates to the retailer strategy. Great understanding around the product or the NPD. They love hearing things from marketing because they see you as more independent. They look at the account guy and just think they're there to argue dollars and cents. So in great category, your marketing people show up and talk about the products, the trends, the NPD pipeline. They get a real buzz out of that. And that does help the sales team go in later on and sell it. If you're coming from supply chain or somewhere else, again, have the purpose. I never go there just to meet someone and build a relationship because they don't have the time. You build the relationship by helping them do what they have to do. So talk about your supply metrics, the challenges or the opportunities you see. And no matter where you come from, try and end up with additional growth opportunities. This growth mindset is a key part. Retail is quick. They're always chasing more, as many of our companies are. So bring some of those incremental opportunities to every conversation.
Right, right. So it's not just about I should meet customers. That's good for me. If you've got to see from the customer's point of view that there has to be something in it for them, purposeful around their KPIs, around, as you say, category growth or margin growth.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you can do that, Mike, you'll be meeting with them every 6 months.
Yeah. And that's really great. And so if you're a more junior marketer, in brand management or level, for instance, does that differ from the marketing director? You know, the brand manager should still be thinking about that and still be thinking about, you know, getting in front purposefully in front of a customer, or does it happen more frequently the more senior the marketer is?
I think it varies enormously because of the people. Good business relationships. I think a great sales call as a sales team or a supplier, you should only have maybe 35 to 50% of the share of voice. You want to be asking lots of questions, listening, engaging, pulling information from the retailer, what they like, what they don't like. And so I think sometimes some marketing teams can go out there and just talk but not listen. And so there's not that comfort in the sales team to take those people. But I think if you're willing, it doesn't matter what levels, if you're a brand manager, go with a national account manager when they're presenting the NPD. Let them set up the meeting and do that. But you present the product. Tell them why it's different, why it's special. And give them some to try if you can, depending on what the product is. Let them see your passion, but do it with purpose. Do it succinctly and then listen to the answers. Hear where their resistance may be and help overcome them. Follow the lead of the sales guy. And then follow up on your actions, and it will really help your sales team, and it will help your own learning as well as a business leader.
Yeah, it may just pave the way to a role as a national account manager. You never know.
Yeah, that would be a great next step.
Yeah, yeah, cool. You mentioned innovation there, and I'm not sure what the stats are. They seem to vary, but I do hear pretty horrific numbers in terms of the number of NPDs that are launched in the Australian marketplace that don't exist a year hence. Why do we get stuck in that cycle, do you think?
I didn't look up the figures, but I remember at an Australian Food and Grocery Council meeting, someone from Nielsen presenting some astronomical figures, 10,000 plus innovation, and about 55 of them made a significant difference to the category in the prior 12 months. I think launching great innovation, successful innovation, meets an unmet need or a consumer opportunity. The second thing, it's easy to explain how it meets that need. And the third thing is it does it while offering some degree of value. And I think too often we're taking products out that are just another me too, or perhaps it's really good technology, but we can't explain it succinctly enough, or we know how to explain it, but we're not putting the marketing dollars behind it, or we're just charging too much. So it seems pretty simple, but I think companies in the desire and chase for noise, for innovation in market, don't stand back and just check those three metrics off. So is it really different and does it meet an unmet need? Can you explain that need quickly and clearly? And is it going to offer value for the shopper, the consumer at the end of the day?
Mm. So with those three things in mind, what MPD would you look back on that you've been involved and you think we got that right?
Yeah, this was one when I was, I got to do it twice actually. So very early on when I was the marketing director in GlaxoSmithKline America, working on brands like Nicorette, Nicoderm Commit, so smoking cessation products, I signed a confidentiality agreement. This is a long time ago. It's out on market. But I was working with the team from Pfizer and then J&J because they bought that part of the business on Nicorette Quick Mist. This is a mouth spray that delivers nicotine in a very measured and controlled way, but it delivers it very, very quickly. So if you're thinking about having a cigarette and you're in one of those unpleasant craving experiences, you spray it into your mouth and you're getting relief much faster than you can from many other forms. Over in America, we're working really, really hard on it and trying to navigate it through the FDA. And you had all of this sort of secrecy between GSK and the brand owner Nicorette in Pfizer and then J&J because GSK had the rights to it in the US. It was a complicated agreement. So we never got to launch it there, but they came out to Australia later on after a stint on Lucozade, and I find myself working for J&J, and we get the privilege to launch it in the Australian market, and it just transformed the results for the brand in Australia. We went from the number two to a very clear number one. It is a fantastic product. It is different. We could clearly explain the benefit, you know, craving relief in under 60 seconds. We could price it at a fair price for the smoker, and it was a great success. I'm very, very proud of the results.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, I've asked this question maybe once before in a previous podcast. Category as a function. I've asked this before of previous guests to a sales director and a marketing director who had differing views, but as someone who's been both, where should it sit in the business, Michael? Should it report through sales? Should it be part of the marketing function, or should it sit independently?
And I think strategic category management in its pure, most high-impact form is an integral part of the whole business. So it's not just a few pages in a brand plan, but it's something you think about before you start brand planning at stage one while you're doing the SWOTs and you work the whole way through. And it can provide a very different compass for the business. In its purest form, it can look to marketing and say, actually, that's not going to drive the category. You're wasting time. You know, kill those projects. Focus on these three. You know, so go back to Nicorette. Don't give us the 16th flavour of Nicorette gum. Go and work on that mouth spray thing. That's very, very different. And so in that case, in its purest form, I do believe category should sit as its own team and equal with sales and marketing. But in saying that, I also do come out with a bit of a cold sweat because when I was marketing director in the US on brands like Nicorette, they did create this very high-end strategic category management team. And it was separate to the sales and marketing teams. And you're very impressive to watch it. But some of the unforeseen consequences that came out of that, the usual sales and marketing tensions quadrupled. It didn't just go up by 50% or something because this category team was in there and it was pulling marketing in a direction that marketing didn't always want to go. It was pulling sales in a direction it didn't always want to go. They're very strong in its opinions. You know, account guys were looking back saying, but that's going to ruin my customer P&L. Brand teams were saying, that's going to direct a lot of resources into customer marketing that mightn't be the best thing to do. So I do think it is the best place to do it, but it would come down, like many things in companies, to the leadership and making sure that everyone's bought on a journey, that everyone's taking that broader long-term position. I think most companies in Australia and globally are probably operating their category management teams at a little bit more of a transactional level than that. And in that case, yeah, they do work closely with marketing, but where they really make an impact is with the customer. And so I think if you're running it at that lower level, it would make more sense to leave it in the sales team.
Yeah, interesting. I think a lot of companies are wrestling with it. Where it should sit right now, and I'm seeing a bit of a swing back and forward, and a lot of debate about where it goes. So it'd be interesting to see where it lands. But I think to your point, actually, I've spoken to a few people offline about some of my senior contacts about the independence of a category, and to your point, this cold sweat thing often comes up around Yeah, that's in its purest sense, it feels the right thing to do. But then you could potentially be creating a can of worms around the business agenda. You know, be really careful about how much leeway you give category as a result of that. So
I think by definition, it will create a business can of worms because they will champion the category. Yeah. And for me, whether it's separate in marketing or sales, that's the most important thing. They've got to have a strong view, an independent view on the category, but then work to connect it back to the business. We can't afford to just provide, you know, retailers with free consulting. So how do you then plug your brands and your account programs in to get a disproportionate win from that strategic category management play?
Yeah. A question in the chat, which is off the topic we've been discussing, but very relevant for today's times. From Adam, he's interested in your views on work from home and how businesses are adapting to this new way of working.
I think at the moment in sales, the whole customer dynamic has changed. At times we could get down to see our major customers, but we weren't allowed in. You know, and now we can't go because of the COVID we have here. And we've all resorted to things like Teams and Zoom, and it is working really, really well. I wouldn't say it could totally replace the in-person contacts because, you know, walking a store, walking competitors' store, even having a cup of coffee and talking about the weekend, all of these more personal elements are really, really important in the sales role. And so as you go back to the internal functions, many of those things I think would also apply. So you can do a lot from home, but I think it's having that mix of the in-person contact, having those less formal interactions, having those chats that tend to happen more freely in an in-person environment, an office environment. You might be standing out in the front of a meeting room having a chat. So for me, working from home, our business hasn't missed a beat. Now, we've really ramped up our sales. We've ramped up our marketing activity. It's been a tremendous couple of years. And people have largely done it from their little studies, their home offices. And I think that will continue. But I would like to see the in-person contact come back. And so it's some sort of mix depending on the business and where people are traveling from. I think that would be a great balance.
Yeah, I got involved in a LinkedIn debate yesterday. I'm not sure where it went overnight around interviewing people face-to-face. And with the proposition being that, you know what, we don't need to do that anymore. You know, we can quite adequately do that on Teams or Zoom or all of the various platforms. And my view is you absolutely can. It's probably 95% effective, but it's just not quite as good as meeting somebody face-to-face.
Yeah, I've done a bit of recruitment through COVID and unfortunately had a new starter literally at the start of this last lockdown. Also have many of my team based in Melbourne. That's where a lot of our customers are. And so, yes, Sally's has a very flexible, and Dulux Group have a very flexible approach to working. And they work out of the big Dulux head office in Clayton. I've done a number of interviews through Zoom, Teams, et cetera. But as we got to the final stages, I did fly them up to Sydney. I did go and have a burger with them. I did walk some stores. And I did get some slightly different impressions from that. Yeah, one candidate, very good, very smart, but just not very engaging. And then you think about, well, how would they go with the customer? You know, could they have the side chit-chat? Could they do the rest of it? And that's what we needed. And then others, you sit down, eat your Portos or whatever it was, and it was a great conversation. You walk around some stores together and you can say, yeah, this guy would work with a buyer. You know, and she or he would do great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I agree. I think there's that 5% on top, which gives you just a bit of richness of insight. And but I think practical terms, the kind of way we work, we sit on these video calls all day, and whereas before you would just walk over to someone's desk and have a 2-minute chat, call somebody else over, involve them. Great, okay, we've got a decision, move on, and now it's a formal team or a Zoom meeting, which can take, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes to do something you might have done in 5 minutes. So I think it has its pros and cons in practical terms. But Michael, that's been awesome. I'd love to kind of continue the conversation and talk more about this dual view that you have, this career as a marketer and as a sales leader. I think it's fantastic to see what you've done. I hope there's a few people on the call today and who subsequently listen to the podcast who are inspired to do the same and put their hand up and talk to their business and say, hey, I've heard this can be done. I'd love to get your take and maybe I can do this, because if we can encourage more people to make those transitionary moves, then it just creates many more career paths and interesting things for people to do with their career going forward. And that's my whole view, is if I can encourage careers to go further for people to get more out of them, then I'm doing my job. So thanks for helping bring that to life today, Michael. I really, really appreciate your time. So that's been awesome. Guys, next up, we have Christy Ryan, sales director of William Grant, who joins the sales director incubator on August 19th. 2 weeks later, on the marketing director incubator, we meet Tamara Howe, who's the GM of Kellogg's New Zealand. Tamara is a marketer who's become a general manager, so that'll be a really interesting path to look at. All the sessions for this year and last year are available on the podcast. We've touched on that a couple of times. It's called Your Future in Sales and Marketing. You'll get it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever podcast provider you use. So we will have to leave it there, Michael. Thanks again. That's been absolutely awesome. And everybody in the call, thanks and have a great Thursday.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, guys.
I hope you enjoyed today's podcast from AXR Recruitment and Search. We're passionate about helping you get the most out of your sales and marketing career. Keep listening as we bring you more inspiring journeys and advice from Australia's sales and marketing leaders. You just can't get this career insight anywhere else. My name is Mike Dixon. See you next time on Your Future in Sales and Marketing.